from Decaf Cycling Club at the top of Mont Ventoux.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, how one man may have changed the world of ultra endurance cycling forever. Victor Bassoni is bucking the tradition of getting minimal sleep in a ditch, but still riding further and faster than ever. Will others follow in his wheel tracks?
Plus, the latest on Wonderbra Gate, how the Unibet Rose Rockets retrieved their stolen bikes, the fastest 100 miles ever ridden on a non-TT bike, a new world hour record, and a racing cash prize that's only available if you use specific equipment. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Demi Vollering is the first rider ever to win the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift twice.
She unseated Kasia Nyodoma on the final weekend. There was some controversy on Saturday where Nyodoma lost the yellow jersey, but Vollering put all doubts aside on Sunday with a dominant solo win on the stage, eventually winning the GC by over a minute.
So huge congratulations to her, she deserved that. We also learned that even though Nyodoma flew up Mont Ventoux, she didn't actually take the Strava QOM.
Why? Because of her privacy settings. They meant that the start and crucially the end of her ride are hidden, so she wasn't eligible. And I'm sure she's not too concerned, though, to be honest. That was her first ever stage victory in the race.
Well, you say she's not concerned, Connor, but she did tell media afterwards she's going to change her settings so she's got the crown on Mont Ventoux.
Even the pros are like us then.
Exactly. Except they've got a few more segments than we've got, Connor. Finally this week, we learnt that Victor Bassoni is taking a very different approach to ultra-endurance riding to what we see normally.
We didn't actually learn that this week, but rather back in June when Bassoni won the Tour Divide in record time.
Yeah, and he didn't just break the record, he absolutely smashed it. So he rode the 4,500 kilometres, or 2,700 miles, from Alberta in Canada down to the Antelope Wells in New Mexico in 11 days, 8 hours and 27 minutes. That was 37 hours quicker than the previous record set in 2024 by Justin Lavica, and 10 hours quicker than fellow ultra-endurance legend Robin Gempel last year, although that one was on shortened route.
When he crossed the finish line, Bassoni was almost 400 miles in front of the second place finisher, Laurens ten Dam, a man who has finished in the top 10 of Tour de France in the past.
Doesn't really get much more dominant than that, does it? But it wasn't just the margin of victory or the margin with which he took the record that got everybody talking. It was the way in which he did it.
Ultra-endurance cycling and ultra-endurance sport in general is often seen as a competition of who can survive on the least sleep, which kind of makes sense, right? The less you sleep, the more time you're riding. The more time you're riding, the further you'll ride.
At least that was the theory. But Bassoni, and also Gempel, are bucking that trend. So at the Tour Divide, Bassoni didn't slum it in ditches for a couple of hours each night. He actually booked himself into hotels and slept for around 4 to 5 hours per night.
Don't get us wrong, that isn't loads. He's not looking at wearing his wearable device and hitting the prescribed sleep and wake-up times. Yeah. But it's more sleep than other previous competitors and winners of events like that have been getting.
Yeah, exactly. And in a similar vein, Robin Gempel's successful strategy at the recent Transcontinental that we spoke about on the show last week was to get 4 hours of sleep per night. Again, the slight reduction in his riding time didn't really seem to do him any harm.
Quite the opposite, in fact. Which makes sense, doesn't it? It's no secret at this point that quality sleep is crucial for health span, so it makes sense that trying to get more sleep will help you perform better when you're on the bike.
And I'd say that the average speed of moving time, at least, kind of proves that. So when he was on the bike, Bassoni averaged 14.1 miles per hour this year, which is almost 23 kilometres per hour. That is almost 1 mile per hour quicker than Gempel's riding time last year, which meant that each day he travelled 15 miles more on average.
For me, I think this has to be a good thing, especially as these guys will be setting a precedent for everyone else. I love ultra-endurance riding, as you know, but it does always scare me a bit when I see how little some people are sleeping each night.
I haven't done those sorts of events like you have, but it scares me as well, the thought of it. I mean, some of those events are on public roads, quite a lot of them, in fact, which obviously are not closed to traffic. And when you're riding that much with that little sleep, the last thing you want to think about is someone making a catastrophic mistake, so to say, due to sleep deprivation and inability to concentrate.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say it's perhaps not the first time that we've seen a rider at the front of these big ultra races and efforts imposing like a stricter resting strategy. I think if you remember Lachlan Morton's Tour Divide FKT attempt, he had a rule where he'd rest 12 hours for every 48 hours. And his main reasoning being that he wanted that kind of extra wiggle room to find a hotel and the right place to stop with that sort of strategy.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, it's interesting too that we've seen these events arguably become more competitive in recent years. And now that the winning strategy has emerged to be more focused on resting and riding as hard as possible when you are awake.
Yeah, and it's a stark contrast to some of the legends of the ultra cycling world. For example, Austrian Christoph Strasser, six-time Ram winner, apparently won the 2019 edition of the race just over 8 days and 6 hours, whilst only sleeping for around 6 to 9 hours.
That sounds quite a lot, isn't it?
That's not per night, that's for the whole 8 days.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh man, that is absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it is. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Christoph's effort. It's mighty impressive. But personally, I really like how riders at the front of ultra races are sleeping more. And I think it shifts the dialogue away from these races becoming kind of sleep deprivation competition and more to the effort being upped at the front. Sleep deprivation is still going to be a part of the battle, but it's obvious from Victor's effort that it's definitely not necessary in the extreme if you want to race and win.
It is an interesting development, I would say. You can let us know what you think in the comments section down below. Have you personally been put off ultras because of sleep deprivation? And what do you think of this new strategy in ultra endurance racing? We always love hearing your thoughts, of course. And also, what's the least sleep that you've ever got by on at home? And I'm going to pose that exact question to Connor since he's done some of these events.
I think I haven't done too badly, really. I've always managed to get at least 2 or 3 hours in the night.
At least 2 or 3 hours?
I've never done the thing where you ride through the night and carry on the next morning. It always catches up with me and I have a massive crack.
Yeah.
The
least sleep you've had is probably when you had newborns.
Yeah, pretty much walking out of the hospital when the sun's rising.
Yeah. And I presume you had a marked difference in when you slept more to when you had those 2 to 3 hours per night.
Yeah, I think you can get away with it for one night. But it's when you're doing these are long events, like week-long events, and it does just catch up with you 2 or 3 days down the line.
Yeah. I find that with nightclubbing. Next day after one night, I'm fine, but do it 2 nights in a row, I'll really pay for it. Yeah. Right, a quick update now on the GCN shop. So we mentioned this last week, but following your feedback, we've just launched a women's-specific cut on the Leaders T-shirt, which I have got on here now. The design, I mean, not the women's specific cuts. You can find it over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
Yep, or scan the QR code that's on screen now. We've also updated our prints collection, ready for the final Grand Tour of the year in Spain. Just like the others, this one is available in A3 and A4 sizes and comes framed, just like the one you see here.
Yep, it does indeed. Thanks again for all of your support. Also, thanks to Dick Johansson for sending this picture in of their exercise room over in Sweden.
An exercise room, that sounds cool.
Does sound cool, and it looks cool as well, Connor, as you can see from the photo. There's a lot going on there, actually, apart from the GCN prints. 6 bikes.
Where are you getting 6 from?
Well, there are 4 on the walls, as you can see. There's 1 Zwift ride, and then there's a Lego bike.
Mr.
Yeah. Lego bike. Yeah. Also, 2 armchairs and a dog bed, so something for everybody. If you'd like to send a picture of your room with the GCN prints on, head to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we'll start with news that component manufacturer 5Dev have put $12,500 into both the men's and women's winner's prize purse at Leadville, but with one key catch, the winning rider needs to be using their Shredville mount.
Mm. I think this one's going to divide opinion quite dramatically in the comments below, Connor. But these are essentially 2 mounts that you can fit to your mountain bike handlebars that allow you to run road shifters and levers, creating quite a unique setup.
Is this a hack or is it a bodge, most importantly?
Well, I mean, it's a commercial product, so it's neither. I think it's a good idea, although somebody pointed out in the comments last week after we spoke about it, they're not cheap, those things. I think it put somebody off in the comments last week. They were going to genuinely buy them and thought,
I think any piece of tech that allows you to be more versatile with your bike setup is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think it kind of looks pretty cool.
Okay. What do you think about the prize money debacle?
I think that's awesome as well. I mean, it adds an extra incentive, another dynamic.
Mm.
Let's see who races with
them. Yeah, we'll find out, won't we?
Anyway, from crazy bike tech to clothing now, and it has emerged that extra clothing checks were put in place at the Tour de France Femmes last week after accusations of riders overly increasing padded bras for aero gains, essentially creating an artificial aero fairing.
Yeah, we also spoke about this briefly on last week's show, didn't we? But in the time between recording that and the individual time trial at the race, the organiser ASO issued a statement that riders must be at the start 10 minutes before their respective start time for final checks of race bike and outfit. But I've got to be honest here, It kind of felt like ASO and the UCI panicked slightly on this one, didn't really think through exactly how they were going to carry out these checks because, how do I put this? Seeing middle-aged male commissaires staring at female riders' cleavages didn't really seem like the best answer to this potential problem to me.
No, that was a bit weird,
wasn't it? Very weird.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I mean, it's not the first time that athletes have been accused of changing their body shape to increase performance.
What are you going to say?
Well, let's not forget penis injections. They were a talking point.
Oh, yes.
At the Winter Olympics this year, male athletes aimed to use it to increase air efficiency.
Penis injections. I remember hearing about that and thinking I'd missed my calling in the sport I was doing. What are you laughing at? What's do you think we should probably move on at this point?
We should probably move on.
I'd say it's probably sensible. Right, we're going to move on. I mean, there's no link here. We're going to move on to the F1 driver, Valtteri Bottas, because he, Connor, has qualified for the UCI Gravel World Championships during his Formula One summer break. So he finished fifth in his 35 to 39 age group at the qualifying event in Czechia. You ready to continue?
I think so. Yeah, the Finnish driver, he is back to F1 with a full-time seat for Cadillac. I'm going to be struggling for a bit now. They are a new team in the championship, though, and it is cool to see Valtteri, I think, obviously as strong as ever on the bike.
He's so strong.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he absolutely... I reckon he loves cycling more than Formula One.
Probably does, yeah.
Won't admit
it
that.
Must be more peaceful, though.
Pretty sure he did.
Yeah. Must be a good, like, antidote to the stress of Formula One.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we think we're riding downhill as fast, he's probably like... Yeah, there's nothing. Anyway, some records for you now. And Franz Josef Lasser took both the Austrian hour record, which he took from Matthias Brendle, and the world hour record in the Paris C5 class, taking that one from Will Bjørgfelt. So he covered 52.054 kilometres, which is 32.345 miles, at Grenchen Velodrome. We'll be back with you shortly.
Oh, Philip, so low, you're jars of water. Anyway, big congratulations to Franz Josef. Epic effort. And sticking with records, a 40-year-old record was broken last week by Kasper von Volschak here in the UK. He rode 100 miles. I'm sorry. Don't need another break. So Kasper rode 100 miles in 3 hours, 27 minutes, 8 seconds on a road bike.
Which is believed to be the fastest 100 miles ever ridden on a non-TT bike, according to Cycling Weekly. Von Volschak is a former Olympian and now performance coach at Uno X, but clearly still very fast, isn't he? His average speed that day was 29 miles per hour. So to put that into some kind of context, especially for British viewers, that's a 20-minute, 43-second 10-mile TT, 10 times, back to back.
Cool, you put it like that, it is even more impressive.
Really impressive.
Yeah. Quite a nut setup too, by the looks of it. And I have a feeling he may have opted for the aero bra too, when you zoom in.
There was a lot going on there in the frontal area, yeah. Really, wasn't there? Anyway, next up, Unibet Rose Rocket avoided a tough start to a block of racing in Spain last week. So the squad were travelling through France to Spain when overnight thieves stole all of the team bikes from the mechanics truck, apparently by cutting through the roof of the vehicle to access the bikes.
Yeah, backup plans were put in place as riders prepared to fly out to the race with their training bikes. But the story thankfully had a happy ending. So the squad's mechanic had an Apple AirTag in his toolbox, which was also stolen, and they passed on details to local police after a possible location was pinpointed. Police then stepped in and recovered some equipment in a car at the tag's pin drop.
Following this, it appears that information then led police to an apartment just outside of Poitiers, where all the bikes were found, including, quite bizarrely, a toolbox from Soudal Quickstep. I guess pointed to the fact that this probably wasn't the first time that these thieves were targeted pro cycling teams. Further good news though, arrests were made, so hopefully this particular gang will get their just desserts.
Yeah. Some sad news from the cycling industry now, the potential demise of some of the biggest and most historical brands in our sport.
Yeah, this was really sad to read, wasn't it? So Accel UK and Ireland, who own Rally and Lapierre amongst other brands, has entered administration. So the group was hoping to be acquired by the Dutec Group and the TriStar e-moving group, but ultimately that all fell through in just the last few weeks.
Yeah, it remains to be seen whether the group can be restructured or sold off to a new owner. If it isn't, it could be the end of Raleigh as a cycling brand, which started in Nottingham in the late 1800s.
That would be terrible, but it sounds like there might be some good news on the horizon. So the Times reported that Mel Sutcliffe of the investment firm Quanta Capital has been putting together a consortium of investors in an attempt to buy the whole Accel group. I should know how to say that. How do you think you say it?
Accel group. Sutcliffe was actually a decent rider as well back in the day.
Was he?
Yeah, he rode the Junior Worlds and the Tour de Langkawi.
I did not know that. Good knowledge. For Lapierre, meanwhile, well, they're currently able to continue as normal as a brand, having filed for court protection in France, which was successful. They're currently looking for somebody to buy out the company, which is based in Dijon. That one, Lapierre, has been going since 1946.
Yeah, I really hope they get a buyer.
Yeah, or for the individual brands or for the whole group, one or the other. Mm. Exactly the same as you, yeah.
Swift news now, and there is a new Z Racing series to take on. Mercury Madness runs until September the 6th and sees four brand new routes available first through this series. There are also women-only events to take on and a month-long GC leaderboard to keep track of where you stand. The evenings aren't, they're starting to draw in.
I know.
Yeah.
It's like, doesn't matter how old you get, it still comes as a surprise.
I know. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, anyway. So it's a great way, I think, to jump on and kind of keep things moving when the light begins to fade, for me, anyway.
Don't forget to check out your racing profile on Zwift to get all the information that you need to track your performances and your level over time, by the way.
Yeah, and before we leave Cycling Shorts, please don't forget we've still got a competition running. Your chance to win a bunch of Ceramic Speed goodies, including a Ceramic Speed Alpha bottom bracket and Alpha pulley wheels.
Perfect for an efficiency upgrade to your bike or for adding a component which is super reliable and robust. You can find all the details and a link in the description below. Entries close this Friday, so get in whilst you can. All you need to do is tell us where Ceramic Speed bearings are hand built.
As a Scandinavian brand, we reckon you can guess this one.
Don't give the answer away, Connor.
I haven't.
You've cut it down from 195 potential countries to 3.
Give me a clue.
A clue. Right, well, good luck. The answer should be a bit of it easier now that you've got the 3 countries to go on. But you still have to have some luck to win, so good luck. Next up, it's time for Hack / Bodge of the Week. You can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. The first one this week, it comes in from Tom Waldner, who has written to us before. Some of you might remember. He put, I've submitted earlier frames and this is my fourth frame design and construction. The frame weighs 1,000 grams. The integrated handlebar and stem is 400 grams. Total bike weight without bottles, 7 kilos. Gearing is completely bonkers with 42 front and 10 to 46 explore. I'm an older guy and need the gears for my annual 3 months in Calpe in Spain. I've got a Facebook group, TW Frame Building, if you would like to see more. This is quite unbelievable. As homemade bikes go, Connor, that's not too shabby, is it?
I think this is honestly probably the best hack I've ever seen on the show. It's incredible. It's really, really well done.
If you saw that at a trade show from a new up-and-coming company, you wouldn't blink twice and think that looks awful, would you?
No.
It looks blooming good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, I love it.
Hack seems like a bit of not enough of a reward for creating something like that, if I'm perfectly honest. But
it's a super hack.
Very well done, Tom. That looks incredible.
Yeah.
Super hack. Yeah, that's a good term.
Next up, Mike B, a snapped boa cable. So when tightening my shoes up, the boa cable cord snapped right by the dial, needing my shoes for commuting and training. I resorted to re-threading the remaining thread and using the best scout knot skills to tie it off around one of the loops. Works fine, and a new boa replacement has been ordered.
I'm rubbish with knots. Mind you, that now I've zoomed in, it doesn't look like a particularly complicated knot, does it?
It's a knot.
It's just a knot. It's like you do for your laces or something. Maybe it's more complicated than it looks on this picture. I mean, before I actually looked at that, I was going to say hack because it sounded like some sort of super duper knot. But I think the boa dial's broken and he's just tied some laces.
What Dan's saying is well done for tying your laces. But I mean, he's got the shoe working.
Yeah, so. Well, I guess it's a roadside hack. It's a reluctant hack from my point of view.
Yeah, reluctant hack.
Right. Vitali, storage solution for a bike in a 560 square foot studio. My wife and I live in a small studio apartment and the space for storage is very limited. After thinking for some time, where can I store my Canyon Aero CF SLX 7? We came up with this solution. Got 2 quarter inch metal angles. and attached them to the pony wall at the second floor of our studio. Used some rope that we had laying around to create some attachment points with loops, and here we are. Bike is stored and out of the way. Also serves as a decoration. I love looking at it. Just a thing of beauty. P.S. The storage solution requires the bike to be clean, which is a bit of a hassle, but well worth it.
I mean, this is really cool.
That is a clean bike,
it's
first
very
and foremost.
Clean, yeah. What? What's the random carpet thing on the wall?
Protect the bike and the wall.
Oh.
I'd have thought.
I mean, yeah, it looks quite aesthetically pleasing, as well as being like, I just put on like a dirty rug or something, but they've obviously thought about this a lot more than I would have.
Yeah, it's like a camouflage rug, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think to take this to the next level, you need some sort of way of hoisting it up to that point from the ground floor.
Yeah, I was wondering.
I think it's just tied on at the moment, isn't it?
Do you reckon? That's a bit dodgy, isn't it?
Mm. Well, the reason I reckon that is because that's basically what Vitaly said.
Sorry, Vitaly. I mean, it's impressive how you actually tie it up there. You must have to go up the stairs and put it on the side over the wall.
I guess so. I mean, I guess it's some sort of... Well, yeah, I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I reckon a good...
You could do it from the ground floor.
Yeah. A good pulley system would work well.
Yeah. Right, hack from me.
Yeah, I'll go hack. Nice.
It is a lovely looking bike.
Yeah. Right, next one is from Bogdan Todia. A valve stem fail. As I wanted to slightly increase the pressure in my tyres while in the office, it's always where things go wrong. I'm always the same. I'm going to do a little bit and then something happens. Oh, man. Anyway, I broke the valve core overnight. I wasn't able to remove the mini pump hose.
I think that's meant to be over tightened rather than overnighted.
Oh, sorry. I was wondering.
Yeah, why are you in the office overnight?
Okay, right, let's start again. Slightly increased pressure on tyres. While in the office, I over-tightened and broke the valve core. Right, I wasn't able to remove the mini pump hose, so I had to get crafty with office supply. So I taped the hose with scotch tape and safely made it home.
that looks ridiculous, doesn't it?
It's ridiculous.
Because it looks like quite a high-end bike as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, so you basically got that bit stuck in there.
Mm. Well, we haven't really done a very good job at describing these things for podcast listeners, but we'll make an attempt on this one. It's one of those sort of pump extension flexible things that you put, and obviously the valve has come out and the core's come out. So you have to tape this long thing onto the valve all the way down the spoke, pretty much to the disc brake rotor. It looks like a complete bodge, but at the same time, I don't think they had any other option. Bogdan Todia.
I think that is a brilliant hack. I mean, it's out of the box. If that happened to me...
It can't be a brilliant hack, just sellotaping it to a spoke.
Yeah, he's got him home!
I know it's got...
If that had been me, I'd have been sitting looking at that and be like,
you wouldn't have thought to use sellotape.
No, I'd have been like, how do I bump the thing up?
I think the problem is that as soon as he takes it off, the air comes out. So you have to pump it up and then tape it on, in a way that it's not rattling around in the spokes and stuff.
Yeah, but what I'd have done is I'd have just kept pumping it up and taking it off.
What, forevermore?
Yeah.
It's like, and every time when you take it off and the air comes out, like, oh, that's weird. I'll try one more time. You would have been throwing overnight in the office. Right, anyway, Connor's going with an excellent hack for that one. I'm going to say hack, but again, it's a reluctant one, I've got to say. Thanks as ever for sending them in over the last week. Always loved that part of the show. As a reminder, globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
Caption competition time now. Your chance to put a witty caption to one of the photos which we provided last week. This brilliant image from the podium.
I mean, it is a chance to put a witty caption, but it's mainly a chance.
Oh, yeah. The prize is...
A coveted...
GCN. Camelback.
I thought we did a word each then for a second. So it's going to be a long show. All right. I mean, I might lose it at this point, Connor. Might have to have a break out in the main office there and a drink of water. Right, this is the photo... This is the photo we gave you last week. This was the podium, the Classica San Sebastian, with a pair of dancers in front of the podium. Our winner this week is Pion Irish, who put caption competition Evenepoel, did you see my chain? Carapaz, ole! Evenepoel, no, it's waxed.
I like that a lot.
Very good. Yeah. Get in touch with us on Facebook via message with your address and we'll get that bottle sent out to you as soon as possible. This week's photo is of temporary race leader at the Tour de Pologne, Christian Scaroni of XTS Astana. I'll get started. Bloody hell, these time trial helmets are getting ridiculous.
Good effort, Dan. If you think you can do better, please do get involved in the comments below with the hashtag Captain Competition. That's not
a
hashtag.
No, it's not a hashtag, but you can do that, yeah. We've been doing too much nightclubbing. It's been 2 hours since the last bit we recorded. We just about collected ourselves, haven't we, Connor? Right, coming up, what's coming up on the channel this week? But first up, the comments from last week's video that were our favourites. Last week's GCN show was the bikes that could ruin cycling for everybody, if you can even call them bikes. Over 1,000 comments beneath the show last week, which we weren't particularly surprised about because we know it's a topic that a lot of people have opinion on, mostly of the same opinion, I've got to say. We'll start with this one from Aaron Pinero. I realise there are no easy answers to the e-bike problem, but I've always thought it would go a long way if any bike that you don't need to pedal was classified as a motorcycle and regulated as such. Kind of makes a lot of sense, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, and Scotty Cycles added to that. If you don't have to pedal it, it isn't a bicycle.
Exactly.
It makes a lot of sense. Life's good, Mick. My cousin bought himself a small motorbike from 1950 that goes slower than some e-motorbikes, and he needs to take a test, has a full driving license and needs insurance. I don't see why we are not regulating and banning e-motorbikes.
Mm. Yeah, like I said, almost everybody of the same opinion for those so-called bikes that you don't have to pedal. At DEGB3WQ went one step further saying, it's not bikes that are ruining anything, it's people. Same as it ever was. Yeah. Same as it ever was. Meanwhile, under the, is training to power actually better than heart rate? Dominishka3, they're a little more expensive than a heart rate monitor, which is a quote from the video. Quite the understatement, says Dominishka. I mean, they are still quite expensive power meters, aren't they? But far more affordable than they were back in my day 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to... I mean, it was a very big investment when I was getting into the sport to have a power meter.
Worth it, though, as a full-time rider, especially. Yeah. And yeah, you can get much more value these days, I guess, can't you? But back in the day, I mean, polar heart rate monitors cost an arm and a leg. Mm. I mean, I'm showing my age here now, but... Yeah, they weren't cheap. I had to have a cardio sport one because I couldn't afford polar.
Did you ever use it when you were nightclubbing?
No.
That's horrible.
Well, I might have done.
Cubanito, power determines the training heart rate, validates it. The same 200 watts can be 135 beats per minute one day, 150 beats per minute the next, depending on stress, sleep, temperature, hydration, nutrition, and fatigue. That's why I use power as my primary training metric and heart rate as a monitoring tool rather than a pacing tool. Mm.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, yeah, you are absolutely right. Like, power can vary wildly for the same heart rate and vice versa. And to be honest, I've kind of used it the same way for the last few years and even during my career. Jake Brake Bill, I live in a part of Arizona where we can see 124 degrees in the summer and 114 on a cool day. It wasn't until watching one of your recent videos about riding in the heat that I gave it much thought, but the heart working harder to cool your body made me pay more attention to it. I've been keeping it at a lower rate for about a month now while riding, and it seemed to make me feel better off the bike between rides. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a like really important point as well. Seeing such hot weather all around the world, and it's just another way of just kind of keeping tabs on this.
Definitely, yeah. And actually, Lorraine and I have carried on our Tuesday and Thursday indoor sessions on Zwift, and every time I've done them through the summer, I have been on at people in the sort of chat bit saying, if it's really hot in your room as well, like, don't push it too hard. It's not necessarily mega dangerous, but it's just, I think you can push yourself too hard at that point.
That's it. And it can catch up with you, even just with the fatigue for the rest of the day. Anyway, under yours and Si's video, actually, which went out at the weekend of your trip to Belgium, loads of brilliant comments. I'll let you lead with the first.
Christian the Slayer. Only Dan could turn a bike packing trip into a company all expenses paid booze cruise. Looks stunning, film crew amazing, those drone shots nicely down on the bike and a slower pace than racing about all the time, stopping and giving lots of information about places. Yeah, I mean, I'm quite lucky, really. I did manage to make it into an all expenses paid. Well, no, I paid for the beer that I brought back. I was considering putting in expenses. I just don't think it featured in a video enough to warrant that. So.
Did you go right up to your limits?
Not quite, I don't think, no.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But there were four of us in the van, and so distributed amongst us, I probably could have got a lot more.
I remember when I was a junior, I'm going back a long way now, we used to race in Belgium with an absolute legend called John Barkley.
Oh, yeah, John.
Take juniors over. We'd do like two races at the weekend in Belgium, drive back. Every trip, he'd fill the car with beer.
Well, there was no limit back then.
No limit at all.
Pre-Brexit.
Yeah.
Limited to the Belgian beer I can bring back now, aren't I?
Osadir said, this must be one of the most enjoyable GCN videos I've seen yet. It's the chemistry and conversation of the GCN show transplanted in some incredibly beautiful scenery with exceptional filming and editing. I'd love to see more videos of Dan and Si on the road. My top three nuts are almonds, cashews, pistachios.
Si threw it out there. He gave his top three nuts and then asked the viewers for theirs. Unbelievable how many people have strong opinions on the order of the best nuts. And also strong opinions on what are nuts and what are seeds and what are neither.
I would say
I learned something, but I read a lot of them and I've completely forgotten. Thomas Vias, were you going to give your top three nuts?
I was going to give my top three nuts. Yeah,
you got them?
Cashews, Brazil nuts, peanuts.
3-1.
One to three. So cashews number one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just wanted to get that the right way around because I'm sure everyone was...
I'm not a fan of hazelnuts. I eat them, but...
No?
Yeah, but anyway.
All right, shall I move on now?
Yeah, you can move on.
Okay, good. Thomas Viles put, absolutely love this video. As a proud Belgian and cycling fan, it was incredible to see our cycling culture portrayed so beautifully. And somehow, I even learned a few things myself from two Brits who were only in Belgium for 2 days. Honestly, one of the best cycling videos that I've watched. You really captured why cycling means so much to Belgium. Please make more videos like this. A massive merci and greetings from a very proud Belgian. I put that one in because that made me proud.
Yeah.
To read that someone in Belgium was so happy with it. So thank you very much to Thomas for writing that and sending it in.
Yeah, nice
sending it in. It's like points of view from 1980. Writing it as a comment. Right. Coming up on the channel this week then, on Thursday, Si and I are going to be making a big announcement. Can't really tell you too much more than that, so you'll have to stay tuned for Thursday to find out what that is. Saturday, how powerful or fit are you for your age? This, I'm hoping, is going to be incredibly interesting for so many of you. Basically, Zwift were kind enough to send us over a huge amount of data that they've been picking up over the last year, which effectively allows us to see what the average power output is for 5 seconds, 1 minute, 5 minutes, and 20 minutes for males and females across all decades from your 20s right through from your 70s. But because they sent it through as both absolute power and power to weight, AI was able to extrapolate the data to find the average weight of each user in their 20s, 30s, all the way through to their 70s, both male and female. Anyway, it made for some really interesting sort of conclusions and observations. That video will be out for you on Saturday. And then on Sunday, it's your video, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, so I have a worry of people on the road being too distracted whilst I'm cycling. I think a lot of people have this mm-hmm. worry as well.
Yep.
And we're seeing like mobile phones and et cetera, distracting drivers. So I just wanted to delve into the topic, see if it really was an issue that we should be worrying about. And I was actually quite surprised to what I discovered in the fact that it's not just mobile phone use, which is the big issue out on our roads.
Right, yeah. So, that's going to be not only a very interesting one, but also a very important topic to cover. So yeah, make sure you will check that out on Sunday if you have the time, and if not, in the week after that. Right, are we all done with our chuckling for the week?
We are. Sorry
good,
about that,
I enjoyed that. Thanks very much, Connor. Thanks for watching
at home.
Rob. See you again soon.